Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everybody and welcome to a special episode of Analysing Anfield / Analysing Everton. It's a bit of a crossover episode this week, considering the Merseyside derby. So, Analysing Anfield listeners, I am your usual host, Josh Williams. Analysing Everton listeners, I'm joined by your usual host, David Hughes. How are you getting on, mate?
Yeah, all good, mate. I'm trying to adjust to this very unique episode that we've put together, but looking forward to it. I think it should be quite good, hopefully.
Yeah, we should probably give a shout towards Dave, to be honest, because he's recording this during this time off. We coped without you last week. Guy Clark was the stand-in. A strong 7 out of 10, I'd say, but to have Sadio Mane back on the side.
Yeah, I don't know about that, mate, but I mean, we're both right-footed, so I'll settle for that.
Right, so today, anyway, we are going to talk about the Merseyside derby. It's going to be only a chat about the derby, previewing it as best we can. And then next week, we will review it and look ahead to other matches. I'm not sure if we'll be doing an Analysing Everton show, Dave. I'll leave that up to yourself.
I'll let you know if we win or not.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be.
I think we probably will do one. To be fair, for you know the Everton fans listening, we probably will get one in. Just because even no matter what happens tomorrow, I think it still doesn't change the fact that things are quite interesting at the moment from an Everton point of view. So we'll touch base on that through the week, me and Josh.
Yeah, I mean, strangely, you say there about the episode. And whether the week turns out well for Everton. It's funny that regardless of the result on Saturday afternoon, Everton are going to be above Liverpool regardless, I think, because I think the goal difference is +7 and there's 3 points in the spacing. So I think that's a bit mental, isn't it, when you think about it?
It is, but you know, I'm not tempting fate for the 8-0 loss here. But yeah, no, it said it's a very very unique set of circumstances. I'm pretty sure there would have been derbies where Everton in the Premier League era where Everton have been above Liverpool, but in terms of Everton, you know, leading the way, top of the table, I can't think of many examples of that in the Premier League era. Anyway, I know obviously we go back to the 80s and before then there'll be plenty of examples, I'm sure. But yeah, it's a really interesting set of circumstances, this one.
Right, so first things first then, how are you feeling, Dave? As a blue at the minute, must be confident going into it, facing a team that have just lost 7-2. So how exactly are you feeling at the moment? Nervous, confident?
It's a strange one, actually, because I think what you say is correct. You know, you under different set of circumstances, you're coming up against a side who were well beaten 7-2, looked miles off the pace in many ways, and you kind of think this is a good time to play them. But I think the obvious caveat for me with Liverpool is, you know, Liverpool have been a fantastic side for, you know, 2 years now, even a little bit longer. I don't think you become a terrible side overnight. I think there's other factors that play into what happened at Villa Park. And I think what that'll do is almost hit a reset button a little bit with Liverpool and just kind of reignite a little bit more of a desire, maybe concentration levels. So I think you'll be coming up against a much tougher Liverpool side than maybe the one that played at Villa. So I wouldn't say I'm very confident in coming up against this Liverpool side. But what I would say to counter that is, you know, you can't not be confident with this Everton side at the moment, because they win them every week. And, you know, they've played 7 games this season, all competitions, won them all convincingly as well, which is key. So, yeah, I think I think there's, you know, there's more confidence there, but I'm not in any way expecting to just go out and see Everton destroy Liverpool. I think it's still going to be a really difficult game.
Yeah, from my perspective, I'm not really sure how I feel, to be honest. I don't think I feel as relaxed as usual or as confident as normal. But at the same time, I do have a lot of faith in this team. And I do, as you said, I expect the reaction. I certainly don't think like 7-2 will materialise again, thankfully. I think if that was going to happen against one team, I'm thankful it was against Aston Villa. Either side of that, I think we played the likes of Chelsea, Arsenal, we've got Everton next. So if it happens against Villa, you know, I can deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the long-lasting effects of what that can do to a team, you know, it was a big loss. You know, the Liverpool have never conceded 7 in the Premier League either. Biggest defeat.
Was that Stoke game, wasn't it? Stoke?
That was 6-1, yeah.
Oh, was it 6? For some reason, I had that 7.
No, that was 6. It was as bad as 7. I think that signalled a bit of a waste time when that happened. This is a bit more of a wake-up call, I feel. But I don't think we even needed a wake-up call for this match, considering Everton top of the league, the only team to win 4 out of 4. I think Liverpool would have went into this match regardless with a bit of a focused head. And when we have done that, we have really dominated. If you think of Arsenal, Chelsea, Leeds, three teams that we seem to get quite up for, and we restricted them to 6 shots, 5 shots, and 4 shots. That's and Liverpool on the attacking side took about 20 themselves. So we have dominated when we've turned up, but against Villa we really didn't. There's obviously squad details that we'll have to get to. We'll get to the Alisson thing, but thankfully Thiago's back. Thankfully Mane's back. But in terms of numbers, anyway, should we start with Everton? Just in terms of, like, I mean, it's only 4 matches in, isn't it? But
yeah,
how they're looking on the numbers side?
Yeah, we should. I mean, I should point out that you've done a lot of number work on this year, so I feel like I'm taking credit for it. Although I suppose I have kind of not been in. But yeah, Everton joint most goals with 12 so far this season. You rank fourth for XG per 90, eighth for shots per 90. I mean, there's no doubt. We talked about this a lot on the... It's interesting this because we've got kind of half listeners from one show and half from another, but we've talked a lot about how many clear-cut chances they've been creating Everton. Second best XG per shot, only conceded 5 goals, and they got the best expected goals against per 90 as well, and the best XG difference of 0.57. Sorry, 5.7. But yeah, it is interesting because I've seen a lot of caveats when talked about Everton, saying that they haven't really played anyone. But, you know, they're all deserving wins, and they are against decent sides. You know, if you think of Tottenham, that's a top six side under Mourinho, away from home, and they deservedly won. Okay, it was only 1-0, but, you know, they did better Tottenham on the day. That was a tough game, and people kind of thought, well, this Tottenham aren't going to be that good this season. But if you look at the results since, you know, United 6-1 dominant. I think they had a 7-2 game somewhere in the Europa League. I think they knocked out Chelsea, didn't they, at home in the League Cup. They drew 1-1 with Newcastle, but absolutely destroyed them on the day. It should have been about a 3 or 4-0 win, but, you know, things just didn't seem to go the way. Went and won Southampton 5-2. So, you know, Tottenham have been a decent side. That looked a good win. West Brom at home, you think, yeah, okay, fair enough. You know, newly promoted side. But even they looked a bit dangerous in the attack, and I thought there was moments where Everton bounced back fairly well. Palace away, you know, they just won 2 back-to-back start the season, won at Old Trafford 3-1. You go to Selhurst Park, win. And then even in between that, Josh, there's the League Cup game against West Ham, who, again, you know, people kind of rolled their eyes a little bit at West Ham, but West Ham have low-key been a decent side. And, you know, to go, they won at the King Power against Leicester, didn't they, just before the international break. So, again, not really a pushover. There's decent sides in there. Okay, there isn't a Liverpool in the City, but... No, I wouldn't say they've just been givens.
No, I wouldn't either. And I think the matches that Everton have played, I think they're all different teams as well. They're all different types of teams. I think you've got to demonstrate a different way of winning against a Palace compared to a Brighton, compared to a Spurs. So the fact that Everton have come out with four wins suggests that maybe they're a little bit more adaptable than normal. I do think it's a different game when you play Liverpool or City. I think maybe then you are against Spurs away from home. I recall Everton, I don't know what the possession stats were, I'll get that up in a sec, but I recall it being vaguely 50-50 maybe. Certainly towards the end of the game when you'd expect Spurs to be trying to get it back into it. Everton were just playing with the ball and Spurs couldn't get near them. The press was completely disjointed and stuff like that. So I think this might be a game whereby Everton have to play a bit of a counter-attacking game. Can you recall much of that being done so far this season? Maybe against Brighton?
Brighton was a bit of a bizarre game. I don't recall it being. In fact, if we bring up, I've just got something to hand that'll bring up the possession numbers on that. It's not our usual provider, but let's have a look. So, yeah, it was 43-57. So, you know, marginally in Brighton's favour, but it just felt like Everton were a little bit more purposeful with the ball, whereas obviously Brighton tend to look after it. But yeah, I was thinking about this before the show, and it will be interesting to see how Ancelotti approaches the game, because I imagine a lot of people want to see him, you know, go out and attack Liverpool, but I don't know. I feel like that it's a dangerous task.
Surely you would have to follow the Villa game plan. Mm. After a 7-2 loss to the current holders, it was a perfect match from the Villa perspective. Mm. You know, three deflections, a set piece, and a gift from Adrian inside 5 minutes. But at the same time, it did cause Liverpool a lot of problems. And considering Ancelotti, tactical side, and all that sort of stuff, surely he's got to look at that as a template.
Yeah, I imagine so. He probably will, but it's just, I don't know. It will lightning strike twice? I don't know. It's hard. I think it's really difficult, because what I'm thinking of, I think of last season. Okay, the Anfield game was under Silva, wasn't it? Everton played a high line, didn't press hard enough on the ball, and got done low quite a fair bit. You know, maybe like three of the goals on the night were just balls over the top. Then you fast forward to the Goodison game, which there was different circumstances there. It was just after lockdown, first game back, but Everton sat in, completely changed the tactics and virtually nullified Liverpool, but didn't have a ton in attack themselves. So I just wonder where he's going to go from those. There's two ends of the spectrum. I wonder where Ancelotti's kind of pin is going to stop on there, and how he's going to approach the game. I just think it's going to be quite interesting, because I think if you go too much at Liverpool, they can still really punish you. But then I still think there's going to be, given how they've played, how they've started the season, I think there's going to be ambition to try and actually win the game, teams don't always seem to do against Liverpool, do they? Quite often set up to draw or even just avoid a heavy defeat. I don't think Everton will do that.
Yeah. I mean, we'll wind the back a touch to the shots per 90 that Everton are posting, because I think it's interesting that they're actually eighth for that. But one of the reasons that they're eighth, despite being fourth for expected goals per 90, is because, as you said, they seem to be quite good this season at generating clear-cut chances. So despite being eighth on the shot count, the shots that Everton are generating seem to be quite valuable. If you look at the shot count for all four matches, Everton seems to be generating at least two big chances a match, you know, with big chances having generally high XG values and stuff like that. I think most of Calvert-Lewin's goals have been in and around the penalty spot, just tap-ins, really. Good tap-ins, but nevertheless, tap-ins. So I think from a Liverpool perspective, looking at Everton and what the potential threat is, they do seem to be, this season especially, generating chances in and around the opposing goal. That tends to be quite difficult to do against Liverpool. It wasn't against Villa. And teams maybe are breaking this high-risk defending that Liverpool are doing. You know, with the whole offside trap, the high line, teams are getting in maybe once a game, twice a game. You maybe think that if they did do that, with Calvert-Lewin in the form he's in, up against an Adrian, you'd probably bag him to score, to be honest. It just feels, it feels very finely poised.
Yeah, it's different. I think what Everton have been doing really well so far is they've been, as you've just touched on, creating really clear-cut chances, getting cutbacks into the penalty area or crosses into the box in really good locations. Now, if maybe we'll try and share them on social media later because we haven't had the opportunity to do it on the pod today, but there's really good shot maps on Everton. You know, a lot of Everton's goals are coming from in around the six-yard box and penalty area. I'm still not convinced how I'd feel. I feel like Liverpool seem to concede a lot of chances with kind of, not a lot, but you're talking about maybe one or two a game. They seem to be when the offside trap has been beat and you're through in on goal and creating like a bit of a 1v1 situation. I'm still not sure if that's maybe Calvert-Lewin's strongest kind of attacking moments. I feel like he's someone who's become quite dangerous in the penalty area to get on the end of passes and crosses. So I feel like Everton's best bet is to try and still, you know, build something if they can in the attacking third and work the ball into the box as opposed to just doing one of the side teams that we do, which is trying to beat the offside trap and getting the player through and on goal.
Yeah, I mean, from a Liverpool perspective, I sent some newsletter out on this yesterday, but if there's any Reds out there wondering about Everton's form, you know, just the top of the table, 4 wins out of 4, they look good. Sometimes the numbers that we can provide context towards can kind of paint a negative future. Sometimes you can kind of like look into a side that are doing well and the numbers kind of suggest that that's going to regress sometime soon. But the newsletter I sent out yesterday was just simply called, I think it was called, Are Everton Definitely Good?
I did read it, to be fair.
Yeah, do you think I was fair? I think the basic answer was, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's every, you know, the performances, the underlying numbers back up what we've seen results-wise, basically, where the point I think you're alluding to is often you can see results coming in without the performances, and that's normally an indicator that at some point the results are going to start falling off a cliff a little bit. But as it seems with Everton right now, that doesn't seem to be the case. It's just the obvious caveat of let's see how they'll do against maybe a few top five sides on the run. But yeah, then, you know, as Josh says, and do check out the newsletter if you are a Liverpool fan. It's I think it summarises Everton quite well so far, actually.
Yeah, I mean, just a few of the basic points from it that some of them I've already mentioned. But fourth on the table for expected goals per 90, top for expected goals against per 90, which we haven't even touched on the defensive side yet, but they clearly seem capable in defence. 53 shots taken, 35 faced. And obviously, according to XG per shot, the shots that Everton generate tend to be, I think it was exactly double the XG of the shots that they typically face. So it's just all good signs. I touched on with James Rodriguez a little bit, who we're going to have to address. But from the Liverpool side, the numbers look equally good. I mean, I had a look at Understats, the expected points table, and the expected points table on Understats has got Everton top with Liverpool second. So you could argue that on the performance side, I mean, Liverpool have got a bit of an anomaly in there that we need to keep bringing up, but they are the two best performance teams in the league so far, probably Liverpool and Everton. Liverpool have scored 11, conceded 11. 7 in a single match. I mentioned it too many times, haven't I?
I think the thing is, though, that's the type of thing that could be phased out or not be so prominent over, you know, 20-plus games. But because it's only 4 games, it does have a huge impact, doesn't it, on things?
It has murdered the numbers, to be honest. I mean, last season, Southampton, I think they lost 9-0, didn't they, against Leicester. And that completely murdered their numbers for the whole season. They never really recovered from it in terms of how they looked on the performance side. Not so much the table, but Liverpool are actually top for XG per 90, though. I think the attack has been decent. Even against Villa, we scored 2, and we looked quite threatening. So it's I suppose you could kind of portray that as it's the best attack against the best defence so far. But as a result of the calamity at Villa Park, expected goals per 90 against Liverpool near the bottom. I think they were bottom five, but again, it's four games in. You can't really look ahead too much with that sort of thing. Mm. 2-4-3-3 systems as well. There's a little note that I've put down. I think Everton are inclined to retreat into a 4-5-1 without the ball. Mm. I think we'll see quite a bit of, considering Liverpool should dominate possession, I'd expect at least. But yeah, 2-4-3-3 systems that work differently.
Yeah, that's it. It is quite interesting because I think these 2-4-3-3 systems are good examples of how they can differ. You know, they both provide the same thing, but the mechanics are different. Everton play with a traditional number 9 in Calvert-Lewin, and he provides like their main goal threat through the middle. But then you look at Liverpool's, and they do have a number 9, but he plays more like basically a number 10, doesn't he? And their main goal threat is you know, coming through the perceived kind of brackets wide forwards. And then in terms of, you know, we talked about Firmino being like Liverpool's number 10. Well, Everton's number 10 is basically the right side of the attacker. You know, James Rodriguez.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, I'll let you elaborate further. But yeah, he's basically the player who kind of drifts all around the attack, really. Although he starts on the right, he comes centrally, even goes to the left, and he's kind of Everton's number 10.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the 2-4-3-3s on paper, there's not that much difference. But then it's almost as though Firmino ends up in the position that James Rodriguez ends up in. Mm. And Calvert-Lewin ends up in the position that maybe Mo Salah ends up in.
Yeah.
So it is a bit of a different dynamic. We speak quite often about, you know, I did the Q&A last week and I think someone asked about having a plan B and all this sort of stuff for different opponents. But I think that's looking at the whole concept of a formation and a 4-3-3 a bit too black and white for me. I think despite the 4-3-3, your 4-3-3 can work very, very differently depending on the players that you've got on the pitch and depending on, you know, who moves where and who's a bit more offensive than normal and all that sort of stuff. But you touched on James Rodriguez there. I'll be honest, from a Liverpool perspective, I am a bit concerned about the dynamic he adds, specifically the switch of play he seems to be so keen on. Because I know how Liverpool defend. It's quite zonal. It's focused on space. So say, for example, if James has the ball on the right side of the pitch, Liverpool will shuffle over. Mm. That's just how Liverpool defend. And if he's inclined to switch the play, I've just got kind of a picture in my head of him switching the play to Richarlison with Digne overlapping and Trent having to manage two players. That's what I've got in my head.
Josh, is this a picture or a nightmare that you're having here?
Well, it's something I've actually seen happen earlier in the season to Matt Doherty. And you could argue Matt Doherty's a bit similar to Trent in terms of his defensive side being a little bit more redundant than his attacking side, maybe. But it's just something that Everton didn't maybe have in the past, that switch of play. And I think Villa used that switch quite frequently. Dean Smith mentioned it in his post-match. I think Grealish played a few of them. It does work. I think it resulted in Ross Barkley having a chance against Liverpool last week. He missed ever so slightly. But those switches of play do work against Liverpool. And James seems to be an advocate of them.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked on this show and, well, both shows really, but more this one about the kind of double jeopardy, you know, having like different ways to hurt you. And I think James Rodriguez at Everton can do that. You know, I had a quick look at just on the switch passes alone, and he's made the joint highest number of switch passes in the Premier League so far this season with 24. I think that's with Jonjo Shelvey. And then next on the list is Trent Alexander-Arnold with 19. He's, you know, obviously someone that we see that do a fair bit, but it just shows how often he will switch the ball over. But then, you know, the thing that Rodriguez has on top of that, that maybe the likes of a Shelvey doesn't, is if you cut off that switch or the switch is not on for whatever reason, he can then hit you with the ball. I mentioned, you know, just before that I kind of had a little break from work and Twitter, I put a tweet out, and it pointed out that James Rodriguez has directly contributed to 8 of Everton's 12 league goals so far this season. What that included was, you know, either scoring the goal, assisting the goal, or the pass that leads to the assist, you know, the shot contributing that action, as a FB ref would call it. But, you know, 8 of their 12 goals this season have pretty much directly come through him. So you've either got someone who can hit you with the ball, or you can put the ball on the opposite side of the pitch where the space is to potentially punish you there as well.
Yeah, I mean, just on that, you mentioned the FB ref numbers there. I actually used the shot creating actions metric in the newsletter yesterday. So this season, we're not looking at pair 90 yet because we're 4 games in. Mm. So this season, the player who's had the most shot creating actions in the league is Salah on 28, then De Bruyne on 27, and then in third place is James Rodriguez on 22. And for those that didn't check the newsletter, a shot creating action is just covers the two offensive actions directly leading to a shot, such as passes, dribbles, drawing fouls. So these players are just heavily influenced in goal. And I think an interesting dynamic that I've wrote about this week for the match is you have James, who's Everton's most creative player for me, on the side that Liverpool are the most defensively secure. You know, you've got Van Dijk over there, you've got Sadio Mane, who tracks back more than Salah does, and you've got Andy Robertson. And you've also got Gini Wijnaldum as well, who'll probably be over there, who's, you know, a bit more of a security-based, protective player, as opposed to a player who's adventurous and going to get forward. But at the same time, on the opposite side, you have a bit more penetration on the Everton side in terms of Digne and Richarlison, probably a bit more likely to conclude a move than James is. I think James is more inclined to construct a move. And you've got them operating on Liverpool's arguably weaker side. You know, you've got Joe Gomez over there, who was bad against Villa. Trent, who's a little bit vulnerable on the defensive side. Salah, who tracks back less. So it really is an interesting tactical dynamic in terms of, you know, the left versus the right, whether Liverpool do actually cover James' side or whether that makes them vulnerable to the opposite side, you know, all that sort of stuff. You got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, but that's the kind of beauty of Everton's design, I think, so far, that it's really, really hard to defend against, because I think if it was a case of, if Rodriguez was just a really good, say, I don't want to do Alexander-Arnold a disservice, because I think in terms of his dead ball delivery, or even, you know, just deliveries in general, he's arguably unrivaled, in my opinion. But I don't know if he can maybe make stuff happen on the ball as much as, say, Rodriguez can in that kind of attacking third. And Liverpool fans will be screaming at me now, but I just think I'm talking about this season in the form that both players are in at the moment. I don't think Alexander-Arnold's really kind of got going just yet. I think that'll come, but maybe not yet. So I think his kind of threat maybe is, you know, switching the ball over to the opposite side, and that's what the team's got to be aware of. But I think it's certainly with Rodriguez at the moment, what do you do with him? Because if you kind of maintain protection on the right side, I do think he can hit you. You know, we know he can hit a ball. He's cutting in onto his favoured foot in terms of shooting opportunities. So it's really difficult. I'm not sure how you deal with him, because if you give him too much space, I think he punishes you. You know, if you do want to protect that opposite side. But as you said, if you kind of shuffle over to close him down, I think he's got enough ability to create enough space to do a switched pass. So I'm not really sure how. I'm glad I'm not, you know, I'm not Klopp, who's kind of designing how that's going to be nullified, because I think it's a difficult one.
Yeah, it is. He's a difficult player to deal with. I am confident in saying that. Like, you could argue really that if he has a quiet game, Everton probably have a quiet game in attack. I think he's doing a lot for Everton's attack. I've likened his impact to Bruno Fernandes at United in terms of just providing that. It's just that high risk passer who's kind of feeding the fast players ahead of him, like Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin. He's kind of putting the ball on a play for him. I think Fernandes is a bit more set piece based, whereas James is a bit more dangerous and open play, I think. But I do think Liverpool will be well aware of it, and I think it'll be interesting to see whether, I mean, Liverpool have typically not been that much that like that really in the past, in terms of really adjusting your system purely to compensate for the real threat of an opposing player. And of course, doing it against PSG for Mbappe. Andy Robertson obviously goes forward quite frequently, and I remember against PSG at home, he deliberately stayed deeper a lot more because Mbappe is just really fast, basically. So it'll be interesting to see whether we come up with anything.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On the Everton side, you know, I've obviously expressed my concerns there regarding potential ways Liverpool can be exploited. Looking at Everton's team, have you got any concerns of how Liverpool can get at Everton?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, although the defensive numbers are really good so far, I am concerned about Everton's, ironically, Everton's right side of their defence. If you have time to look at the shot locations of where they're conceding shot from, a lot seems to come from that side. I think Coleman is kind of putting in a good shift going forward again, but I think there is a little bit of a... Although we played really well against Liverpool the last time, two teams met, I still think there's a vulnerability there. And I also think, you know, when Mina's been playing there as well, and Mina's just...
Is he fit at the minute?
We don't know. It's not quite clear. I can't even think he would come in his place, but we don't know for sure yet because... He did go away on international duty. I think he felt something, so he didn't play in the last game. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I think it's just Mina's defensive capabilities sometimes leave a lot to be desired. He seems a very how can I put this, unusual defender. You know, if you kind of think of defenders, you think of body on the line, throwing everything at the ball to stop it. You know, lead to goals and thing. And I look at Everton conceded a free kick against West Brom where he kind of, I don't know if he opts not to jump in the wall or even duck, but as a centre-back, it's not what you'd expect. And it obviously leads straight to, it goes into the back of the net. In that same game, he basically backs off the attacker from inside their own half all the way to the edge of the Everton box, and then that leads to a goal. He's very unusual, and I don't think he likes, you know, mayhem around him. And I think if you think of Mane coming at you with pace, cutting in, I think that could be a problem. And that's the side where Everton seems to be conceding the most shots. And then, you know, if you're conceding shots, you want to be relying on your goalkeeper. Then, you know, Pickford's not keeping much out at the moment. He's already conceded two from outside the box so far this season. So I think that's definitely something I'd be concerned about, especially with Mane coming back in, who had to watch the 7-2 from the sidelines last time. I think you're going to get the best version of Mane as well in this game.
Yeah, that is Sadio Mane's side, isn't it? What you just said there, Coleman and Mina. And I think Mane has got quite a good record as well in Merseyside derbies.
Yeah,
as well. I think he decided one very late on.
Yeah, he's... He seems to be in this fixture that someone like Klopp always still wants to lean on. You know, even when he makes changes, I think the 5-2 game last season at Anfield, I'm pretty sure Mane still played that game, even though other players come in, didn't he? And I think he's someone that he's obviously earned Klopp's trust in this game. And even when things do need to be changed, I think he'll be the player that he still looks for in this fixture. So, yeah, that's the side I'm concerned about. Plus, there's still the issue of there's not a ton of pace in Everton's back line. You know, if Everton do start pushing a little bit higher up the pitch, I am concerned about, you know, players getting in behind, because Mina and Keane both aren't very quick. I think that could be a concern as well.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there about Pickford. We're going to have to talk about this. We're going to have to talk about the two goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Now, I've voted quite a few pieces this week, if you haven't guessed. but one that I wrote earlier in the week was just like, this is two, according to the numbers at least, two fairly high-performing teams. I said earlier that, you know, this is arguably the two best-performing teams in the league at the minute. First and second in the league, according to Understat's expected points table. But this is where a goalkeeper comes in, because your goalkeeper, no matter how good your performance is, your goalkeeper can undo all that work in an instant if he's error-prone, or if he's incapable of saving a very average shot, or if he's erratic or whatever. And I think both keepers are. I don't know who's more worried at me and you. Probably me. Probably me. I think Adrian, I've said before, I don't think he's good, mate. I think he's a concern. Like, I don't know about you.
I'm really happy about this, because I remember last year, obviously we've been doing our live feel for a while now. And last year, everybody was like really raving about Adrian, because he'd done quite well in the Super Cup and things, like, you know, save penalty shootouts. And I've never liked him. I've never rated him. I don't know what he was. And I understand he had to be a kind of Liverpool needed that someone else to come in as a backup keeper. But due to Alisson obviously picking up a fair few injuries by his standards anyway, over the last, year and a bit, he's played so much. And I think he's been found out a little bit. I don't rate him, but I also, at the moment, I don't rate Pickford either. I haven't for a while, if I'm being honest. I try and choose my words wisely with Pickford, because I think he gets that much stick that it borders on like something a bit more sinister. So I try to keep myself away from that side of things, but I have to call it how it is, and I don't rate him. I think the numbers back up how poor he's been. And you made a really good point there, Josh, about how you can only really be as good as your keeper. I'm sure you'll touch about on some of the Adrian examples shortly, but even this season, I think of, you know, how Pickford's kind of done that for Everton. There's, you know, conceded the goal early on against West Brom. It's quite starting the game quite well, where it was a bit of a, I think it was from outside the box. That was the one where Mina lets him run the length of the Everton half, and then he just kind of flaps at it. If you think of Brighton, I thought Everton were dominant against Brighton in the first half, and then he just completely messes up the ball into the box, and suddenly Brighton are back in the game. And although Everton managed to get a second just before half time, I think that you can see the change of the game complexion almost, where, you know, one team goes from like going through the motions, dominating with ease, to kind of looking a little bit nervous. I think Pickford has done that a few times already to Everton, and a few times over the last year and a bit. This is also a really highly emotive game, and he doesn't deal well with highly emotive games.
Neither does Adrian. I mean, when we faced Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, he was an absolute bag of nerves from the moment of kickoff. He had very, very little to do, because Liverpool played so well. And whenever he was called into action, the ball had like bounced off his knee, or you could just tell a mile off. He didn't want to be used, didn't want to be called into action whatsoever. Mm. Please try and win without me, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And after 110 minutes of football or something, Liverpool had done enough. Got the lead, I think, or whatever. I can't really remember the match. I've done what I can to forget it, to be honest. And after Liverpool doing enough, I just recall him doing something absolutely mad, giving the ball away to, might have been Morata or Llorente, it might have been, and he scored. And it was just it was depressing, and it happened again 5 minutes later.
Yeah. It does kill you, you know. We laugh about it, and we're kind of laughing now, but it's really unnerving as well for the defence, you know, because there's no confidence for what's going on behind you, and you really need that confidence to do well, you know, because it breeds confidence within defenders themselves, and you know that things will be dealt with. But when it's not there, there's a tendency to overthink actions that you do, kind of snapshot, you know, should I clear this, should I not, is he going to come out behind me? And it just created an unnecessary kind of layer of almost panic across the back five. And I think Everton have definitely lost faith now in Pickford. From an Everton point of view, I think Ancelotti's tried to support him. No, they haven't brought in a keeper again, but you know, they did make inquiries on the last day of the transfer window, which tells you all you need to know, really. I think he's had public backing a few times, Pickford, by different managers, and he still looks miles off it. So he's definitely going to be something that can be targeted. As I said, it's just a good thing that, you know, there's almost a carbon copy at the end of the pitch. And
yeah, well, I suppose that almost makes you fit in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think as he initially in his Liverpool career profited from moments that kind of lifted his what the perception was on him. I think he won the penalty shootout in the Super Cup. Funnily enough, he was against Kepa at the opposite side. and when he came into the Premier League matches, he was not great, but Liverpool kept winning. So because Liverpool kept winning, nobody focused on what he was doing wrong or whatever. Don't get me wrong, in there, there's been the odd good save, but every keeper does that. I mean, that's to be expected.
Mate, I said on another podcast about 2 weeks ago, talking about Pickford, and I said, you know, people kind of point out the saves he makes. And just to be clear, Pickford has never stopped making good saves. But the problem is, you concede soft goals in the same game, so it just basically cancels out any good work. And I think Adrian is the same. Like, didn't he pull off a decent save in a 1v1 against, was it Watkins against Villa? I'm trying to think which save was his feet.
Yeah, I recall a really good save in the Villa game. But then those who will give him credit for that maybe will forget that inside 5 minutes, he gave him the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the reason, but he wasn't the reason. I completely get rid of that. He was not the reason Liverpool were bad. But I think it stemmed, if you like, from an early mistake 5 minutes in. You know, he was responsible certainly for the first goal when he gives the ball away with a bad pass and stuff like that. Liverpool conceded 7. It was a bad day. But I don't think, I'm fairly confident, if Alisson was in goal, Liverpool don't concede 7. Goals, mate.
No, I agree. I was just going to say, have you had a look at the save percentages recently of the two?
Yeah, well, I've got a few numbers here from a piece that I wrote after. I wrote it over a week ago, but Liverpool haven't played since. So,
yeah,
just to put into context for Adrian, he started 13 matches in the Premier League and the Champions League, and he's kept 2 clean sheets. And he's conceded 25. He's faced 54 shots on target, and he's stopped 29 of them. That leaves him with a save percentage of 53.7%. Alisson's save percentage in the Premier League last season was 72%. And the worst save percentage posted by a starting goalkeeper was Kepa, with 54.5%. So 54.5% is still more than Adrian's
53.7%.
So by those numbers, I mean, it's a short sample size. It's not entirely fair, because Adrian's a backup keeper. Shouldn't really be doing these comparisons and stuff, in a way at least. But by those numbers, Adrian's less likely to save a shot than Kepa is. And that is saying something.
You know, Kepa's basically the floor, isn't he? You know, he's the basement. He's as low as he should be going, really. I mean, obviously, it's worth pointing out then that P- Pickford's numbers. He's around. Let's have a quick look.
I think he was 63.4.
I've got 64% here. So his save percent 64%. And well, I had a quick look at, I didn't have time to go on FB Ref, but I had a quick look at Y Scout, and it reckons over the last calendar year, that Everton have probably conceded around 5 more goals than they should have as a result of basically Pickford and in his inability, I guess, to save shots that you would have expected them to save. This is based on expected goals, so it's just not great, is it, really? Because you'd be expecting an average keeper. We've said this before, but you'd be expecting an average keeper in the division to perform roughly in line with their XG. You expect the top keepers, you know, like the likes of Alisson, to kind of outperform in that area. And then, yeah, if you're underperforming like Pickford is, then it's just alarm bells, and it's been going on for a little while as well. But you know what, Josh, just quickly before we carry on, it's not even just the numbers that concerns me, it's just the all-around play, it's the kind of the psyche you see from him when you're out there.
I think both of them suffer from a similar issue. Probably more so Pickford, to be honest. But I think they both have an unwanted trait in a goalkeeper, and that trait for me is they're both unpredictable, and you just don't want that in your goalkeeper. You don't. Yeah, I think Pickford especially is quite eccentric, in terms of just doing stuff that maybe a 10-year-old would do on Sunday league, just mad stuff that like. He can just do because he wants to do it. Like sometimes I see him just absolutely volley the ball up the field and there's no one there. And it's just like, it's almost like he's just decided to just hit the ball as hard as he can because he wants to. the thought process just doesn't seem to be particularly thorough. And Adrian is a bit similar in that regard. They're both quite unreliable for that reason, really. Just for a bit of perspective on Pickford's numbers, by the way, Pickford's 63.4% in the league last season, save percentage. That placed him 19th, ahead of only Kepa. So most goalkeepers, in terms of save percentage, you're looking at, you know, 70, in and around 70% is what you want, really, probably, in a normal case. Pickford's on 63.4 last season. Adrian, short sample size, including the Champions League, but Adrian's on about 53 and a bit. So both keepers, I mean, would you go as far as saying like it? I mean, I wrote in the newsletter, I think I concluded the newsletter with whoever has a better day will win the match. Would you go as far as saying that, or
potentially, yeah, you know, potentially, it depends what chances are created, you know, how many shots each side has. But I think that is, put this way, I think it's going to play a massive part, you know, whichever keeper performs best on the day, it could be the deciding factor. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully it comes down to the better performing team, but yeah, it should be a luck thing at the end of the day. One other thing I want to touch on is the inclusion of Thiago. Now, I feel like this is relevant because the past few games at Goodison Park, especially, in fact, mainly at Goodison Park, the games have been really, they've been lacking flow, lacking rhythm. Liverpool have been unable to put the foot on the ball and gain control of their environment, basically. And I think if there's one player in the world that does that for you, it probably is Thiago. He's never played in a major side derby before. There's going to be no fans there. So I think, for him to just be deployed in the middle of the park and just kind of for Klopp to just say, like, you know, get control of the game, I think that's a different weapon than Liverpool have had in the past few times if we went to Goodison. I just wonder what impact that might have. I'm not sure if he's going to start or not, but even just bringing him on after the hour mark, that's something we haven't had before. I think for that to happen in the past, I think we've had to bring on someone like Lallana, who's really technically good in small spaces and really two-footed and all that sort of stuff. But he's not a Thiago in terms of dictating tempo and and all that sort of stuff. So
I must admit, Josh, from an Everton point of view, Thiago really does work, concern me. I think, we spoke about him before, that he's a top player. I think he offers you two main things, doesn't he? You've already touched on one, the control in terms of possession. He can kind of really get on the ball and pin you in, putting the ball either side. But I think what else he has is that kind of penetration from deep as well. That's a concern for me, because he can kind of unlock things that maybe other players don't see, or he's the type of player who can punish small openings that other players would normally overlook or ignore. When I saw Keita was going to miss the game, not that I don't rate Keita. I think there's a great player in there. It's just it hasn't really happened for them consistently yet. I thought this probably opens the door for Thiago to come into the side in some form, potentially. I guess my only concern from a Liverpool point of view would be, how up to speed is he yet? Because he's played 45 minutes. He probably hasn't trained that much with the team, maybe a week or so, because obviously the bulk of the side would have been away on international duty, wouldn't he, over the last 15 days or whatever. But then Ancelotti's talked about Rodriguez, and he said, these great, great players don't need time to adapt. You can come in and the truly, the best players can just hit the ground running. And I think Thiago could come under that bracket.
Yeah, it will be interesting to consider this lineup, because I think Wijnaldum will play on the left of the midfield trio. And Henderson played a bit of minutes for England. And I think considering this is a derby and what Henderson offers on the leadership side, Klopp usually includes Henderson if he can. So then you've got maybe dropping Fabinho to the bench, maybe dropping Fabinho to Joe Gomez's position, benching Joe Gomez.
Would you do that, by the way? Because I've thought about this week, and I thought, although it was such a kind of question marks over putting him in there, he has played well there, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. I'm really not sure what to do. I haven't thought about it much, but I think I would be seriously tempted to play Thiago, purely because I think in the past few times of Winter Goodness, and as I've said, with lack of control, I think Ancelotti has a bit of, he kind of has Klopp's number a little bit on the tactical side. We tend to struggle against Ancelotti teams tactically for some reason, and I think maybe taking the emphasis away from the fullbacks in terms of ball progression and adding the dynamic of Thiago in the middle of the pitch would offer something different. And considering Liverpool lost the last match, losing again would be devastating. And we kind of need to get back onto winning ways a little bit, because I think Liverpool losing against Villa, it feels like it's kind of opened the doors of the league almost, as if to say, someone else can step up here, or there's an opening for a team to exploit. And I think as the holders, you want to minimise that as much as you possibly can. You want to give opposing sides virtually no hope, almost. And losing makes that happen. And I think having Thiago on the field, I must be clear, he is absolutely ridiculous player. And I think he offers something different to what Liverpool's midfield currently has. Bit of a cliche saying, but it's true. So I would be tempted to find a way to get him in there.
It does feel like what's happened, a week or two ago, maybe it might have been just before the Chelsea game when we were trying to predict whether he'd come in the team. We did talk about how the message you could send to players if Thiago just comes straight into the side and he kind of Klopp dropped players that he trusts and he played so well for and got Liverpool to the position they are, what kind of message would that send? But as you just mentioned there, on the back of such a heavy defeat, it does kind of feel like any tactical decision is fair game, and no player could really complain. If there was any kind of big changes or players were brought into the starting 11 because of well, just suffered a heavy defeat. You know, you could kind of go in and start bringing in who you want and kind of putting players where you want to try them. I think it does open that door, definitely, without there being any hurt egos, I guess.
Yeah, it probably does open the door for it, to be honest. I mean, when you consider Liverpool's high line getting done by Villa, a lot of it did stem from the lack of intensity a little bit from the midfield, pressurising the ball player. So, as you say, it would give Klopp the option to justifiably drop one of his starting midfielders lately. One of them's Keita, who's injured.
Yeah, just what's your thoughts on how Thiago would perform without the ball? Because I thought he struggled a little bit for me at Chelsea, but I didn't ridicule him at all for that, or, you know, judge him for it, because it was 45 minutes first game of the season for them in a Liverpool shirt. But how do you think he'd adapt to that side of things?
When you say he struggled against Chelsea, I think if anything, he was just overly eager. I think it's probably the way I'd describe it. I think defensively, I think maybe there's a bit of a picture there for him that he's a passenger. I've said this before, and he's really not. He's really active on the defensive side, really hungry player. In terms of being, you know, used to Liverpool's defensive system, how we defend, how we behave without the ball, that will take a bit of getting used to. I don't think he'll be up to scratch with that. But being over eager in the derby is maybe a bit of a bad thing. That's sure. I mean,
that's it. That's what I'm trying, because it's such a. I assume he comes in as a six, doesn't he? If he does come in, and that is such a crucial area of the pitch, I think, without the ball, especially. I think with the ball, he's going to cause big problems for Everton. But I do wonder whether you'd want him to be more adjusted to Liverpool, maybe to. I don't want to keep saying, you know, to the league, because as I said, I'm not always buying that as a thing. But maybe just even just trained a few more weeks more with the team and got used with the intricacies of how Liverpool play. I just wonder how he'd perform without the ball, and, you know, whether that could have been an issue if he does come in.
Yeah, I mean, if he was included, my first thought would just be, as you said, what he offers with it, as opposed to what he might not offer.
Yeah,
without it. But it's an interesting one for Klopp. It'd be interesting to see what he does. It's the big moment then, Dave. Verdict. What do you think? Honest.
I've always been, as you know, and obviously we've had derbies before on these shows, and I don't think I've had the opportunity to predict an Everton win. I'm inclined actually to lean towards a 2-2 draw. Yeah, you know, I was going to just push the boat out and say I'll go in Everton 3-1 victory, but the reality is I just don't think you can suddenly start overlooking this Liverpool side or expecting to, you know, comfortably get a win. It's going to be such a tough game. I think it'll be a competitive game, hopefully, and I'm going to go 2-2. Finally get some goals in this fixture, considering there's only been something like 3 in the last 6 games at Goodison.
Yeah, I mean, look at the 2 goalkeepers, mate. They will be goals. but I think my verdict, I'm going to go 2-1 Liverpool. And I know that's very, maybe, predictable. But I have seen this team over a few years react to negative results. I think we have key players back. Still don't have Alisson, of course. I mean, my 2-1 prediction is providing Azian puts in a 7 out of 10. But yeah, I expect a reaction. And I think when Liverpool are really, really, really focused, like we were against Arsenal and Chelsea, teams really, as good as they are, teams really don't get a look in. And I think Liverpool will have that focus about them in this game because of what happened and because it's a derby and because Everton are top of the league. It should refine their focus for 90 minutes. And when Liverpool have that focus about them, we do really dominate them and pretty much own the pitch. And I think Everton have the threats to get out every now and then. And I do think they'll find a net. But yeah, I have a lot of faith in this team. So I'm going to say 2-1.
Yeah, I'll, I was going to say, I'd settle for the draw just to keep the 3-point gap, you know.
For the Blues listening, I was with me playing football with my cousin earlier in the week, and he said I'd probably actually take a draw, which is a big statement for a Liverpool fan, Champions League winners, Premier League winners. Mm. You know, offered an insight into how far Everton have come in a short space of time. But anyway, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for joining us, Dave, on your day off.
Yeah, I'm going back to doing nothing, I think. Yeah, but yeah, no, I enjoyed that. Yeah, very different, and hopefully we remained objective on both sides, so it was a good enough listen for both Reds and Blues.
Yeah, I mean, next week we'll probably split up the shows again. I don't think this will be a thing going forward, but for the derby, you know, why not? Maybe we'll do it next time when the second half of the season comes about. But thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.